Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everybody and welcome back to the Trek Culture Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Sean Ferrick.
I'm Paul Sutherland.
And we are very lucky to be joined by the fantastic Trek Yards this week. Guys, how are you getting on? Welcome. How are you going?
We are doing very well. At least I'm doing very well. I can't speak for the commander there, but doing very well.
He likes to, but...
Yeah. Well, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us on.
You guys,
nice to be invited.
Are you guys coping with no new Star Trek for the foreseeable future?
Oh, it's been a nice break. 23 solid weeks of content and lives, and we were busting something pretty hard.
I'm thrilled because I was editing 5-7 videos a week.
Yeah,
so I'm thrilled.
That's not the answer I was expecting, but good.
Look, it was great. We'll wait for the next batch. It's good. It's all good. We'll live our lives in between then.
I love it. It's like, you know, kind of, you know, do you enjoy Star Trek? Yeah, sometimes. But listen, there's lives to be led. But no, that's what I mean. Like, let's kind of get straight into it because, like, obviously, Sam, so yourself and myself, we will have obviously just watched Lower Decks, which has only just released on Amazon in the UK and Ireland. We would, of course, have not seen this before. So how do you feel having freshly watched this?
But I'm thrilled because I have a time machine, luckily, so I was able to go back and review them as Stuart in the past.
Oh, that's brilliant. Machine. That's handy.
We have TARDISes in the UK, you know, at least in the British part of the UK, so, you know, it's great. No, it's great. Great show. Well done. Make season two. Hurry up. Mike?
Sorry. Mike, we know you're watching. I'm just going to jump back. I loved this. I thought it was brilliant. And I loved, not to make this too obvious or anything, I really love the ships in it, way more than I was expecting to.
They're better than Picard's ships, I gotta say. Not the biggest fan of those, unfortunately. And we didn't get many beauty passes in Discovery. So, seeing the Parliament class, seeing that the Titan is finally canonized now, the Luna class was great to see. So yes, fantastic ships. A lot of California classes, though. More than I expected.
Yeah, well, you mentioned California class last, and you add the though, so am I to assume that you're not a huge fan of the California class?
When I first saw it, I was kind of shocked, but you can ask Samuel. I did a first reaction to it, and the more I looked at it, the more I liked it, and it grew on me. I'm actually quite a fan of the ship. It wouldn't be something I would design or think of necessarily, but I think it works for what it is.
It kind of reminded me of something I would have designed in like the sixth grade when I'm like talking to my nerdy friends about Star Trek, you know, like taking bits of the Enterprise D and like cobbling together my own fictional ship. But I think that's a lot of the show, to be honest. Like, isn't that a lot of the show kind of feels like playing Star Trek or imagining what it would be like in your own like child version? Not to like I'm not casting aspersions on it saying it's childish or anything, I love it, but it's, you know, like it's a lighthearted, you know, colorful version of the franchise. Yeah
it's quite fun, and I draw parallels to the Mandalorian. Like the Mandalorian, the way that they play in that world is very much how I would play with my action figures, so that's why I really enjoyed it. So I think the same thing can be said about Lower Decks. So
Not to, like, totally overwrite the conversation about the ships themselves, but I think the show reminds me a lot of The Mandalorian, too, because of how, like, concise the episodes are. You know, they mostly choose to tell one story and do that and then move on next week. I mean, we're talking about episodic television, which is, like, a novelty now. but it's just like so clean and easily digestible, I think, both The Mandalorian and Star Trek Lower Decks.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'll take us back to the ships, though, if I can. What's interesting, I think, about the Lower Deck ships is that we didn't get many, and they're not exactly beautiful or anything, but it, the whole show takes a TNG approach, just kind of modernized and with the self-knowledge of the universe it's in. TNG only had TOS, and they actively try to avoid parts of it. This is the first show that takes the same TNG approach, but really embraces it. And so we get the one hero ship, and then most of the other Federation ships are all kitbashes of that. And it comes across that way. That means it feels faithful to TNG. And the fact that we see four Californias or whatever, because they've only got one miniature, yeah, that's... But it kind of has that vibe. But you do get those great ships of the week, which are really interestingly designed, but also barely used and barely seen, but they're kind of like, oh, that's a nice design, as TNG had when they had the money to build something fresh. So it kind of feels TNG even though it's modern.
Right, and I mean, like, the Parliament class, the Vancouver, just had the same interior as the California classes, which was either a nod or... Yeah.
It's listen now, it's been going by because the Enterprise A had the same corridors as the Enterprise D. And, you know, if a Constitution class and a Galaxy class can have the same internal workings.
One had a lot more chrome. It felt
one did, that you're absolutely right. One did have a lot more chrome. I am not a chrome denier here, and I apologise to all chrome enthusiasts.
Not against Cylons, then. Good.
Oh, no. Oh, God. No. Although I do prefer the skin jobs, I must say.
Oh.
Oh dear. Right, moving swiftly along.
Yeah, this is a unique podcast for us. We've talked about The Mandalorian and Battlestar Galactica.
So, in the Orville, what's your favorite ship in the Orville?
That being said, we have Fleet Yard, which is our spin-off series. All sci-fi ships.
Like,
so.
Babylon 5.
It's very good, because actually that's one thing. Now, obviously, Sam, I asked you about this before you started recording, but I just want to say it again. I'm loving the wall behind you. Stuart, I'm loving the wall behind you as well. Don't worry, that I love you both equally, but it's absolutely fantastic. Tell us just a little bit about where this has come from.
The fans and my PC. All originally rendered, all hand done, all hand sized, all hand everything, and then put together in a beautiful little collage. But every single one is sponsored by a fan. So, you know, a bit of pride in every way there. But it kind of gets lost as a picture, but it's yet when you see it, it's like, oh yeah, you kind of, you're always looking for stuff.
Everybody asks him about his wallpaper.
Where can I buy that? It's like, oh, you can't. No.
Mine is just, I got a lot of stuff and just, you know, just how, yeah. It's just always been like that, so there you go.
I really like, I'm loving the Elsars just above your head there. That is well proportioned. Paul, why don't we do something like that? We've really missed a bit of a trick here, haven't we? I mean, you can kind of see some models behind me and my little cheeky Enterprise A there.
Yeah, I thought you were doing it for us.
So let's talk about Lower Decks. It's... I have to say, right, I can't wait until we get the inevitable models of all the ships. What I love about the California class is it looks like they scoured the galaxy for leftover galaxy class saucer sections and just kind of slapped some engines onto them. And I really like that kind of, you said it right, the kitbash design. I think that looks great because, as you said, I think of the Wolf 359 fleet. I mean, that really was, they threw a saucer section at the wall and threw other bits and whatever stuck, there you go, that's going to be destroyed by the Borg.
Well, one of the unique things about the California class, when we spoke with Mike McMahon, is it, when you look at the saucer, it's really not galaxy class at all, and the nacelles are quite different. There's definitely some aspects of the ship that we haven't seen come into play yet, which he kind of teased we would by the end of the season, and we didn't really, and I was kind of disappointed. But he might have been talking about season two because they were kind of working on that at the time. So, but yeah, it does look very kitbashy, but it does work. It feels like one of the FASA ships, actually, the old FASA tabletop combat simulator. They had some really interesting designs, movie era like, but they were very kitbashy. It's not for everybody. Some of them work, some of them don't. So, yeah.
And the California's a bit weird because it does, you know, their team really, honestly, if we're honest, they had to make a ship, their design ship intentionally, that was kind of ugly because it's in the bottom rank of Starship. Now, Starship, not like freighters and stuff, of that line. So, how do you make your hero that looks not good? That yet looks like of the era, and yet it means a hell of an ambitious, weird thing. So in terms of all of that, that's why the first reaction I thought, as we all were there, was like, ah. But when you realise every single piece is intentional, And so, and it all connects. It's like, yes, okay, and as those things come out more and more, you know, that's where the genius comes in. How do you design that? I wouldn't want to design that. But somehow, yeah, it's good. It's not the best thing they could have made, but that's with everything, you know?
You know, like, Rutherford mentions that the Cerritos is old, and, you know, they kind of avoided the, you know, like, giving her, like, battle damage or, you know, weathering or, you know, like, she still looks, like, pretty consistent with the way ships look in TNG, but they do, like, at least mention that she's kind of falling apart.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it even goes down to the registry, which is one of the first things everybody noticed. We asked Mike about that, and he said, you want it to stand out and be different, so it's kind of like a tramp stamp. It's not loud and proud on the front. This ship's going to be towing other ships. It's one of the least important ships. And I thought that was a very, very interesting way of, because that was the biggest one of the biggest things that we were talking about till we got a chance to speak with him was, what's with the registry? Every Federation ship pretty much has a proud registry on the front. Mm-hmm. This one doesn't. So that was an interesting little story.
Well, he also told you guys first, I think, on Trek Yards, mentioned the color coding of the ships, right? Like, I think that's the first time that got...
I think people could guess it, but yeah, I think probably.
Yeah. Probably first officially, yeah.
I mean, for those who don't know, you guys want to tell people what the color-coded California-class starships means? I mean, because I feel like people probably didn't even really notice that they have different stripes unless you were really looking.
Well, it is weird because no other ships do. It's kind of an odd thing. Yeah. It's like with the 32nd century Discovery. It's like, what's an operations dot? What's a command dot? What does a command dot do? You know what I mean? So it's kind of redundant in of itself. But yeah, you got the red command, you've got the blue science, you got the engineering. Luckily, we didn't see the blue one that much. It doesn't look as nice.
Right, the Merced was the only blue one, right?
Yeah.
I always felt like once we saw the Parliament class, it was a bit like, so once you had taken the ugly design of the California class, I say that with love, it's like they had refined it into the Parliament class. It's like this was maybe like a step beyond, say, refit Constitution to original Constitution. Maybe it was like the next step along the line.
Yeah.
They'd missed maybe, or they'd done something in the middle. Because the Parliament class looks gorgeous.
Well, that's what I think probably happened, was they designed a bunch of ships. Parliament was one of them. And Mike McMahon's like, no, that's too nice looking. Hold on to it. But we don't want our hero ship to look like that. Might have been kind of the process that happened.
And also, we did get hundreds of comments saying, oh my god, that should have been the hero ship of Lower Decks. What were they doing?
Hmm. Yep.
Like, absolutely. Instant reaction. But there's a reason for it, because that's not... No offense, that Parliament class isn't memorable. It looks super normal. Just an updated Miranda. Cerritos is memorable. True. You know it. From every angle. Better and worse. You know it from every angle.
That's totally fair. Yep, you're dead right. And it does. It stands out in the mirror. Because I think... Well, you said it. Like, when we all saw that first picture, it was like, oh, God. And yet, once I saw it moving, like, as an actual footage of it, I went... Oh, God. Oh, this is actually great.
Well, they actually treated it like a hero ship from any other Trek shows before Discovery in 09. Classic flybys, classic beauties, classic establishings, even at warp with a classic warp. You know, everything you'd expect. And so by seeing it in the normal ways, you grow to appreciate like every other ship, which other shows don't necessarily do, but they did. And it's like, oh, my God, where's this been for the last 15 years?
Yes. Beauty shots. Flybys. Please.
Yes. Yes. Please. I mean, just... Please. Sorry.
I mean, so, wait, well, so, like, just following up on the beauty shot thing, you know, so, like, what we're referring to, obviously, is the fact that Discovery Season 3 especially gave us a ton of new 32nd century Federation starships and then barely showed, you know, like, barely gave the audience an opportunity to really get a good handle on what they look like. You know, they make a big point to introduce Voyager J, and then she's like in the background for, you know, most of the rest of the episodes she appears in. Is that like a hang up for you guys? Like, it was for us.
Absolutely it is. We try to get the best shots from the episodes, and we enhance them and we zoom in on them, and, you know, it's Samuel doing all his magic over there, and we talk about them. So if you want to get a closer look at those ships, go subscribe to Trek Yards on YouTube. Just saying.
I will throw my support behind that. Please do.
But the journey about the Discovery sort of style of CG in the three seasons is quite a weird one. Season 1 started with insanely contrasty, dark shots that you might have got lots of close-ups, but you couldn't see anything pretty much. And so at university, kind of like, it might look modern, but it doesn't look good by any means. The end of the season, the few shots they had, they really toned that down as the production team were changing and you know, just different people giving different orders. Season 2, they had some genuinely nice beauties. They genuinely did, because they learned that Discovery is way too long, so let's do a more zoomed-in focal length, it hides things. You know, classic tricks you learn, did better. Season 3, they did better, and then at the same time, like you said, just didn't show stuff. But as an artist myself, CG artist, like, putting all your fleet of ships in a black bubble with only blue light from one direction, that's not an easy sell. And clearly, they weren't able to achieve good-looking ships from the abstract sense of good-looking. And you can tell those ships weren't the focus of any episode. You know, there wasn't any call in any of the scripts for a close-up, so they didn't detail them as you would a hero ship. And unfortunately, ships in Voyager and Enterprise from the 90s and 2000s are actually nicer 3D models because they would actually get more screen time, or at least closer up. So they were, a lot of the time, Pixelmondo, which is the main VFX house, they have so many different shows and TV and movies. So they can only do what needs to be done, and if they don't need to be done, then they don't get done. That's why a lot of the Discovery Season 2 models are lackluster, and Season 1, yeah, you know, mothership, awful. But, yeah, we hope with, like, the Picard finale, they would improve them for the Blu-ray. No, but at least Star Trek Online improved them, so go look at the Inquisitor for Star Trek Online. It's beautiful! It fixes everything about the ship.
Wait, you were hoping that they would add more detail to the Inquiry-class ships at the end of Picard?
It's an embarrassing scene. Everyone knows it's an embarrassing scene. If you're cloning the ship anyway, instancing, you just change one ship and then you instance it again and you re-render it. You know, they had 4 or 5 months of Blu-ray. You know, I would be embarrassed as an artist to get that out. They should be too.
Well, Stuart,
they could
have
fixed it in post.
Sorry, Stuart, you mentioned that you weren't super into the Picard ships. I mean, they did at least give us a plenty of, you know, good looks at, like, the La Serena and the Romulan ships, which is kind of an interesting, you know, it's interesting that the two, Discovery and Picard, had such different approaches to their establishing shots. But I personally thought that La Serena was kind of like an interesting departure. How'd you guys feel about that ship?
I have a 3D printer right here, but it looks very Batman-like to me.
It actually does. It does. It looks like a cool Batwing.
So clearly the red is like a big part of the appeal of that ship.
Well, for some, I guess. Not for me personally, but the biggest issue I had with Picard ships, like, yeah, I liked the antique Romulan Bird of Prey. That was beautiful. Awesome.
Yes, it was,
You know, doubling down, putting Discovery shuttles in that time period was a big no-no for me.
That update the shuttles. Me now as well.
We need the sad violin music there.
Yeah.
We do. A little bit, like...
Walking into Starfleet headquarters, looking up, seeing the hologram of the Galaxy class, then it instantly turns to the Disco Enterprise. Don't get me wrong, I like the Disco Enterprise, but it's not my canon Enterprise. It's not prime timeline. So they immediately put Picard, in my opinion, in the Disco-verse, as I call it, and it's not the prime timeline. That are very disappointing to me.
Well, now I have to ask, do you guys both, in your headcanon, believe that Discovery is set in an alternate timeline, an altered timeline?
I do. I have to in order to enjoy the show. Because it's clearly takes too many steps away from visual canon for me. So,
and I'm a canon purist in the sense that if they say it's canon, it's canon. If they didn't say it was canon, we couldn't make our great analysis videos. Because if the Discovery is in a separate universe, we can't compare the tech to anything, therefore there's nothing to talk about. But when they say it's canon, we can say to them, well, you doubled the size of the Enterprise. 3 years ago it was this size, then you doubled it for 4 years, then it went back to being the same size. Sorry, why did you refit it 3 times in 4 years for no reason? Why was the... You know, so as soon as they... So the fact they say it's canon makes us have the ability to shoot them in the face, and in essence, with the canon, they do wrong. Which is fun. But it's not great, but, you know...
Yeah. I mean, thankfully, Picard avoided any, like, massive starships that, you know, seemed outsized, but obviously we just got off of Season 3 of Discovery, where, you know, the finale had the insane... hollow space that's supposed to be the turbo lift, you know, hub, or I don't know what it is, but
no one does. They don't know what it is either.
I don't think they're living that one down anytime soon.
I mean, I caught a video of yours where you guys had calculated that Science. Simply would not fit inside Discovery.
No. That's a big sticky point for me. And people say, well, you forget, you know, episode 16 of season 2 of Enterprise, Future Tense, where they had the 31st century technology. And it's like, no, we didn't. Watch season 1 and 2 of Discovery that happens pre-TOS. The turbolifts, those big caverns are there.
Yeah.
They're even in the Enterprise. They're in Pike's Enterprise, hence Kirk's Enterprise. No, that's just wrong. I'm sorry. And we could have forgiven that a little bit for season three, because season three was so much better. But then, like I said, they quadrupled down on the stupid in the very last episode by making a super long, unnecessary fight scene, which could have been cut down and or not included, and just showed off this cavernous space.
Stop. Yeah, we were saying in our review of that the episode was like a solid great, and then just went like this, and then flatline for a good like 9 minutes. Then the end was great. I don't know if you've ever seen an episode that was that dramatic, and just it felt like a different person wrote that segment and said, right, now you've got to go make it. And since it's all green screen based stuff, they could just have reshot anyway. It felt so disconnected from the rest of it, of quality versus childish JJ. Weird.
I don't know if I love the childish JJ thing, but it's a...
Well, a turbo lift sequence in your ship that doesn't fit in a fight, you know, that the idea of that scene is childish.
Well, I think the interesting thing about, like, if you're going to compare it to the Abrams movies, when you do get shots of the, like, expansive interior of the Enterprise, it generally conforms to what you would imagine, like, the shape of the ship would be, and with, like, that Discovery sequence, you could not place it in, like... Yeah, you know, you saw, like, schematics of the ship that showed, like, an open area, but given the shape of the ship, like, that open area could simply not be that large, you know, even if they're, like, going back and forth in the turbo lifts across that space repeatedly, it still just didn't quite, like, make a lot of sense. But, like, you know, I've said this before, like, I think with Discovery, you kind of, like, have to turn off part of your brain to enjoy the show, and, like, that's, like... At least for me, like, you know, like, I'm, like, big into, like, how starships work and, like, you know, the quirks and the production design. But, you know, like, watching that, you know, like, I had obviously, like, the same hang-up you guys did, but, like, I had to just, like, let that not affect my enjoyment of the finale, though I didn't really enjoy the finale anyway. But is that, like, something that you guys are able to do with Discovery, is detached from that?
In that case, just breathe and say the Discovery fit is much nicer than Discovery. Discovery fit is much nicer than Discovery.
Well, yeah, you know, it was great. Yeah.
Just savor that.
Yeah, it grew on me. I think when I initially saw it, I was still coming to terms with programmable matter. But I like it now. At the start, I was a bit like, ah, I see. And the wonderful confrimplimplimf will go in here, and that will make this happen. I'm talking about a show that uses dilithium as an engine source, and I laugh at myself sometimes. But the detachable nacelles... I don't know if I'm still... I still don't know if I'm sold on them. Even though they look great. And I do like the look of them, and I like them on Voyager J. I just still don't really get why.
Well, can I make a quick analogy to the cat? And in fact, the dog from Picard. They sell them as a point of, oh, look! But they're not played any specific way beyond, okay, there they are, moving on. And the cat was done perfectly. It wasn't a big deal, but it was just there. So they make a deal out of those engines being touchable. Means nothing in the grand scheme. And they even retach for warp. And sometimes spore drive. Sometimes not spore drive. Inconsistent. But they don't mean much.
You're right, actually.
I mean, there was obviously also a plot point in the finale about the engines. So they could have, like, tied that into it some way. But they did not.
So that's okay. It's a gimmick that... I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but in the bridge, they have this whole scene of them being a move matter. Never used again on the bridge. Never once... Again, everyone just uses standard controls because they realize it's expensive and doesn't add anything.
Exactly, and I think Burnham says at one point, you know, when they do the kind of the reset of the computer core, there's sort of a throwaway line about, oh, well, and that's the end of the programmable matter here and there. Not on the exterior of the ship, of course, because the nacelles are still detached, but there's a comment that says, there won't be any of those joysticks. So, all right, and as you said, Sam's like, cost too much, did it? All right, that's cool, that's grand. So, no, season three, I think, raised the bar in quality for the story we got in Discovery. I would agree. I think, Paul, I know you feel this way as well. Season two of Discovery is probably still my favorite, in a large part because of the whole story with Pike and the Enterprise. I was very pleasantly surprised at how much I really liked Anson Mount, really liked Ethan Peck as Spock, our third Spock in however long. But... I know my favorite Star Trek of the year was Lower Decks.
Oh yeah, hands down. Yeah. No competition.
No Picard championers out there.
I mean, I argued that, you know, I argued for Picard in, you know, the last podcast we did, but I wasn't saying that that was the best of the year. I think that Lower Decks is, like, head and shoulders above a lot of Star Trek that's come out in the last couple, what, decades?
Well, it's the best since Enterprise, and for my father, it was the best since Voyager, which goes back a long way.
Yeah.
But briefly on Picard, though, if you simplify what Picard is, it's an incredibly simple story that was dragged over a lot of episodes that if you watch it week to week, there's so many threads, and we looked at them, me and Stuart, and we're excited by the possibility. 95% of them went nowhere because they weren't important, / the writers just threw in things. And in the end, it finishes almost every plot line, which leaves almost nothing left. Clearly feels rushed, and clearly feels they swapped, because they did. They made two episodes out of nowhere and removed two episodes out of nowhere, so you can't reform a season properly. And if you binge it, you don't think about it, so you just go through. Because it's such a simple, very limited story. So it's a show that had so much promise, but should have been made differently. But a better is binge show, so everyone else is going to watch from now on. That's the thing. Do you make it for the first audience, or everyone else forever? You know, that's tricky.
I mean, I assume that you could enjoy binging it in, like, a more episodic or, like, a little bit, you know, tighter way. But, you know, beyond that, I thought that it was stronger than Discovery Season 3, but I think I'm probably alone here with that, too. But, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Going back to the detached nacelles for just a second.
Sure. Yeah.
That's a great way of showing advanced tech. The problem that Discovery ran into is they based their tech, when they started the show, on advancements from our future, not from Star Trek's future. Because they already had holograms. They already had all this fancy stuff, which you move to the future, how do you improve that? The nacelles aren't attached. That's the way we're going to do that. So that's the problem that they ran into with Discovery, and one of the mistakes I think they made is trying to retcon the tech. TOS has always been a period piece. It has been in Relics and TNG and in DS9 when they showed it, and Intermirror Darkly and Enterprise. It's always been a period piece. They went to great effort to make it look like it should. And with new lighting techniques, things like that, you can really make the TOS look good, despite everybody's arguments. They went into this with the Brian Fuller directive of can't have cylindrical nacelles, can't have this, can't have that, and looking totally different than TOS and retconning it so that it's technology based on our future, not what we see in Star Trek. And I think that's why the detachable nacelles are a thing, because how else are we going to make things look advanced in the future? They're not connected, you know?
And just to give some direct examples, you know, when you watch the first episode of Discovery Season 3, if you look at the view screen, they must have rushed it. They use the exact same graphic for all the L cars on the view screen as it did in Discovery Season 2. So why are they using a 900-year-old computer interface? Then you jump to Picard. Picard now feels not advanced at all because they had that tech in Discovery. So Picard now feels rudimentary. And then you think about the dots. The dots would be really impressive in Discovery Season 3, these little repair robots. But because Discovery invented them for Season 2, they feel completely underwhelming.
And the Enterprise had them all along, apparently.
Yeah. Like,
well, according to the short trek Ephraim and Dot, there were DOTs on the Enterprise the entire time. So,
well, according to that short trek, the Enterprise A self-destructed.
Yeah, there's also a window in sick bay, and the registry is on the side of the hull for some reason. Like,
it's the least kind of thing possible. That thing is terrible.
But, okay, so I think we're all, like, really anticipating Star Trek Strange New Worlds, in part because of these Paramount Plus ads that have been showing up every couple of days. Are you guys hoping that they retain the visual style that they established in Discovery Season 2? Are you looking forward to, like, maybe, like, a refit Enterprise, or is that just, like, an exhausting premise, the idea of seeing another Enterprise?
Yeah, what we want we won't get, which is more TOS looking. They've already built the sets. They've already set their look. They're going to continue with that, unfortunately.
Yes and no. I'll let you finish.
Yeah, but they have the opportunity to kind of fix things along the way. But I'll let Samuel take over from here, because I think I know what he's going to say.
Well, and just keep in mind, they finished Season 2 of Discovery, but since then we've had all of Season 3 being filmed, released, Season 4 being filmed. The Strange Worlds isn't filming yet, or at least is just about to film. So that means they've had over a year of those sets. The Enterprise Bridge was packed away or destroyed. It wasn't kept up in soundstage for a year and a half. That's not, that space is more important for all of Discovery's sets. So that stuff's flat packed. They can rebuild it and repaint it. They're going to do it anyway. And given it was only on a 2-episode budget, they have a season budget now. They're going to do new corridors because there's Discovery corridors and new everything else. So I guarantee they'll do a pretty decent amount of rejig, especially with the ships, because they can sell models. You know what I mean?
You guarantee it, or you hope for it?
It makes sense because they also want to. They also want to make it look better than Discovery, because that's kind of, they're a brand new show. If it looked the same, it wouldn't be a selling point. Whereas they could say, "Hey, we're the Enterprise refit pre-Connie, as in pre-Enterprise." So I think it'll be different as a way of selling it different. But it all depends on the showrunner. Because look at the showrunners we got. We got the first couple had their own ideas. We got Mike McMahon made Trek beautiful, and we had Michelle Paradise from Discovery season 3. Kept the formula, but gave her own real spin of story and characters over all else, and that benefited the Trek vibe a lot. So if the showrunner really cares, it will. But remember, the only reason the Enterprise bridge is like 25% bigger, 30% bigger, is because Kurtzman said, "Oh, I want to see a corridor around the edge." It's like, but that won't fit in the ship. It's like, yeah, it doesn't matter. And now there's a corridor. That's it. That's the only. It was built to scale, and he added it because he's a bit of an idiot when that comes to that stuff. So I think they know. I think they'll make it better. You know, it was such a good bridge. Just change it 30%, 40%, 20, you know, I was trying to go down 25%, 10%, you know.
Yeah. Actually, I think that this is a good opportunity to talk about news. Sean, what do you think?
I think it's a pretty good time. Yeah.
For over 2 centuries, you're listening to the Federation News Network.
We've one bit of news that dropped and then immediately seemed to undrop. Paul, you want to take this one?
Yes. It was reported last week that Lycia Naff, who played Sonia Gomez in Q-Who and I think the Samaritan Snare in TNG season 2, she did a podcast back in October where she said that she was going to be appearing in Lower Decks as Sonia Gomez. However, all the sites that were reporting that have now removed that reporting.
Yeah, I saw that.
Just so we don't get pulled down, we are reporting on the fact that it was reported.
We are not saying that this is actually happening or, you know.
We're not directing people toward the weekly Trek pod where you can listen to her interview of her talking about it. We're certainly not saying that.
If it still exists.
What do you think? So this would be a legacy character, allegedly, coming back to Star Trek. How do you feel about this kind of supporting characters coming back, as opposed to, you know, I think Jonathan Frakes is contractually obligated to appear once a season in every single show. You know, how do you feel about having other people coming back?
I think it's great, especially like a character that was in 2 episodes. Be cool to see Loeffler come back. She was in two or three episodes as well. But yeah, the biggest thing we've been talking about that I really like to see is Ensign Kim come back. Whether he's still an ensign or not, it would be the joke, right? But yeah, please bring those people back. We've come up with so many great story ideas of people that could come back that we've mentioned during our reviews and stuff, that it's definitely a possibility. And to hear that rumor made me kind of smile. It was like, yeah, that's great. It's a character some people will remember, some won't, but it's that canon that really, you know, adds to the mythos of everything.
And we had just watched it in our TNG review, and I think we both said, why is this woman not in more? I know she was meant to be, and then wasn't.
Right.
Such an obvious choice for that sort of weirdly memorable, obviously, you know, looks and sounds different, so it won't be quite the same performance, because part of the performance of being cute and young and naive, etc. But yeah, brilliant. I mean, why wouldn't you bring legacies back? Because Mike McMahon's a very, very clever man. It's like, wouldn't be surprised if you see the Traveller and really, you know, odd. What? Really? You're like, actually makes sense. It was like, oh, spoiler for the villains of the end of Lower Decks is an inspired choice. Who the hell would have thought of that? Inspired beyond words. So, brilliant.
I howled laugh. I have to say, like, full on, you know, I LOL'd out loud. I did. Mm-hmm. You know, especially when they were saying, oh no, another Enterprise. It was perfect. I have to say, it was perfectly written. Mike McMahon, out of everyone who seems to be working at CBS at the moment, gets Trek, and he gets Trekkies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, see, like, when I saw that Sonia Gomez might, or allegedly, will appear on
Lower Decks...
She
may be wrong, but she's already been fired.
Right, or she could have said something that got misconstrued. I don't know, I haven't listened to the podcast, but I don't really like podcasts. I don't you know.
Why did we let this guy on these things?
I didn't know that I, like, needed that. Like, I never, like, liked Sonia Gomez. Like, I was thought she was kind of, like, a cheesy addition to TNG. Sorry. But, like, as soon as I read that, I was like, oh, my God. Like, I need Sonia Gomez on Lower Decks. She's, like, the prototypical Lower Decker.
Well, it's like Barclay. If he's not in it, it'll be astounding. He's such a perfect character to bring in that show.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, Joe, I hadn't thought of him, and now that you say it, would be perfect. I would love to see a Lieutenant Junior Grade Kim, who finally got a promotion after all these years. But he didn't make captain, but he got a promotion.
And the Lower Decks crew get him demoted. That'd be hilarious. Something they did.
Now, see, what you do is have him be, like, one step towards Admiral, and then Mariner meets him and gets him, and he has to, like, go undercover as an ensign, and then everyone's like, what are you in the Delta Quadrant? It's like, that's a different Kim.
A little old for an ensign, aren't you?
So, you know, other news that we were briefly talking about before was the fact that CBS All Access is being rebranded finally as Paramount Plus, which begins on March 4th, right, Sean?
March 4th, yeah. We have been getting, obviously, those little kind of teasers that have been dropping on Twitter. Now, I've been loving them because they're technically, this is going to sound so silly, but they're advertising Strange New Worlds. This is like the first kind of trailer, and I'm really stretching the definition of trailer here, the fact that Pike and Spock were in these scenes. But yeah, it was awful. Did you see, I presume you caught the one, I think it came out, was it yesterday or the day before yesterday, where Spock is about to amputate the arms of a puppet.
And I didn't see that one.
Oh, it's very
You didn't see that. Yeah, you gotta check that out. Yep. It makes some choices. I wondered, you know, like, rather than, like, enjoying them for, like, stupid spots that they are, I'm like, ooh, I wonder if this is what they're going to be wearing in Strange New Worlds. Like, oh, is that the way Spock's hair is going to look in Strange New Worlds? But I feel like these, like, 30-second spots with, like, tiny little slivers of Pike and Spock are, like, feeding the fandom right now.
Well, it's doubly interesting because Patrick Stewart was the voiceover for at least one of them, I believe, both of them.
Yeah.
And again, both in full costume show at least they're super engaged. No, I mean, that's a real symbol. I think even the longer one had Sneak Martin Green as well, not actually in it, but like a clip from Discovery Season 3. Yeah. And that's like three full parts of their Trek universe being included in a very short set of trailers. I know, obviously, they've got five shows and probably getting close to $1 billion per, you know, per cycle of these shows. That's a lot of investment, but that shows a lot of confidence. And given that all the shows are theoretically getting better and better and better, that's a good sign.
I think it puts to rest some of the rumors channels saying that Strange New Worlds won't go into production or has been cancelled. Mm-hmm. And
you know, I was just wondering, did anyone catch how many times the show's been cancelled today? I think it was five times it was cancelled today.
I stopped counting. It's just
oh my god, wait, breaking news, Trek Culture Podcast been cancelled? What?
Trek Culture was cancelled 2 years ago.
Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah, this isn't broadcasting. This isn't connected to anything. Just thanks for joining us for the chats. It's been great fun. It is. It's, you know, despite the schism along some of the lines of the fandom, I think it's a good time to be a Trekkie at the moment. We have content to love or hate, but we have content.
The fact that there's an upward trajectory is important because you can start with rougher content, but as long as, you know, because the fact is Brian Fuller had bad ideas, you know, and people had to forcibly scrub that and move them. But once you commit to $10 million worth of sets and costumes, you know what I mean? So they've been changing progressively. And how many showrunners have they gone through now? Not in a bad way, just they keep changing their vision. But they're gonna really get there at one point. And it isn't the, you know, TNG got good in season 3 thing. That's a completely different analogy. But it's a new company. It's a new thing. It's a new people doing it. It makes sense. It takes a few times. You know, Beyond was the best of the three Trek movies. That took them 3 to get. It just took an entire different team to make it. They got there.
So there's actually other news, though. Like, I can't believe how much news, little tiny little tidbits. But Kate Mulgrew did another podcast. I'm not prepared at all, so I can't tell you which podcast. But she, again, seemingly indicated that Star Trek Prodigy is going forward with a second season. Makes sense because it's animated. I believe Lower Decks got announced as a two-season pickup. But, you know, that was something that I wasn't really expecting to hear so soon.
And that was an online convention where you get, like, 2 minutes with the actor and you get to talk to them. She just said it out of the blue. It was really random. I watched it. It was quite sweet, though. Makes sense. I mean, they need the animated shows.
Yeah,
they need them more than anything else right now. Because if they don't get content out, people aren't paying monthly.
Right.
And well, I'm excited and confused and just hopeful for Prodigy. Like, so many thoughts are going through my head, and then they get announced that Janeway's in it, and it's like, okay, so the original idea that I kind of thought in my head is now a little bit changed. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that's all about, because that's exciting.
Right. For those who don't know, what is Prodigy, Sean?
So Prodigy, it's it is very much aimed at the younger audience. The animation style is going to be like Trollhunters, if anyone knows. It's like CGI as opposed to, say, the traditional animation of Lower Decks. Janeway will be acting as a sort of a guide and a mentor for a group of
wayward teams.
Yeah,
or something like
kind
this.
Of wayward teams.
And also it's Captain Janeway, not Admiral. They call out Captain, so it's a weird point in the timeline.
Oh, yeah. That is interesting because, you know, she's Admiral Janeway in Star Trek
Pretty
Nemesis.
Quickly.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, maybe they hadn't even landed Voyager by the time they were like, actually, sorry, Captain, we need you. So obviously there's no date yet on when it's releasing. I think it's 2021, so that would be great if it was. And obviously it's obviously much easier to get it out quicker. Again, animation you record. So I don't know. I have no idea what to expect. I'm really enjoying anything pretty much Kate Mulgrew does. Kind of related, not related, but has anyone had a chance to read or listen to Una McCormick's The Autobiography of Janeway? I'm just coming up to the end of the audiobook now. Kate Mulgrew is narrating it. It is absolutely brilliant. I don't think we often do book recommendations on this pod, but I am recommending this one right now. It's fantastic.
It's awesome.
It's fun.
I was just thinking, you know, if she's Captain Janeway, this obviously happened before, you know, before she became they got back the first time, and then, you know, she did the Prodigy thing, then became old Janeway and went back in time and changed things.
The end game, future Janeway. Oh goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, plot twist. I like it.
So it's an older timeline that gets undone. Oh dear. That's a way of doing new canon. It's like, oh, it gets undone in 5 years. It's fine.
Yes.
The thing about Prodigy is that the kids show Motica is a thing to worry about, because there are kids shows and there are kids shows. There's the Teletubby kid show, if that translates to the American people, where it's only aimed at children. Adults will not enjoy it beyond the visuals. But there's the Disney film kids film, more of the old, you know, 90s ones, where there are layers. Kids enjoy it because it's pure, but you watch it as an adult and still enjoy it, and you can go back and watch it as an adult. So if they make it for kids, it will not stand the test of time. To make it good, that happens to have a younger slant, but even that, for kids, they're all ensigns. They can't be younger than 18.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And yeah. No, they'd be cadets, so they have to be at least, you know, 20, 21. So they're not actually young. In the Boimler's the same age, and Tendi's the same age. So that's not considered a young program. So that you know, it's not 15-year-olds, it's not 13-year-olds. It's 18 to 20-year-olds, and you know what I mean. So they've already. It can't be that kids. Doesn't make sense.
I hope it's like Beast Wars, honestly, which is CG, written for the older G1 crowd, but also brought in the kids as well with deeply layered storytelling. Beast Wars was fantastic. So if
I
it's
really
like that,
Beast Wars.
I did too. If it's like that, yes, that's what I want.
my assumption has been that it would be like Clone Wars, just to throw another one in there, which is you know, ostensibly for kids, but you know, is clearly you know aimed at like the dedicated Star Wars you know fan base. Yeah.
And if you watch all Mulgrew's appearances, she always says it's about inspiring young kids, like I did in Voyager. So I think it's more the moticum of it makes younger people feel they can do something, they can really achieve. So it's more about the inspirational side, which means positive, a positive show, which is definitely what we want. So that, and definitely different to Lower Decks, which is about the screw-ups. So also good.
That's true.
You know, different.
Yeah.
And then, Paul, you had one last piece of news as well from last week.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for the sirens.
While you are arrested.
Must be breaking important news with the sirens.
Whistle Slime McGee. Exactly. It's Selena Gomez thing. She's being, you know, the CBS account.
Did you say Selena Gomez?
I did. What's her name?
Sonia Gomez.
I would be delighted if Selena Gomez turns up in Star Trek. I think she'd be brilliant.
Hey, maybe it was a misunderstanding and Selena Gomez is what Lycia and F was talking about.
That's why these things were taken down. Yep.
Okay, well, now that the cops are gone, I did Deadline. A virtual screening of That Hope Is You last week. It had a panel with Kurtzman, Michelle Paradise, and Sonequa Martin-Green, and it was a lot of backslapping. They did mention that the villain for season 4 is going to be some kind of science-y obstacle over, you know, like a physical, you know, mustache twirler, though. You know, I that was kind of treated as news, but I'd kind of been thinking that, like, that's actually the villain of both season 2 and 3 is, like, a technological scientific problem plus, you know, like a villain on the side. So I don't see how that's going to be, you know, too different. Though if it's a purely scientific obstacle, you know, that could obviously be, you know, more towards the kind of Star Trek that we all grew up with. That we're
maybe
kind
it's
of like,
Voyager 7.
Maybe. And beyond that, he mentioned that you know, Book and Michael's relationship would be tested, and I wish I cared.
Yeah,
I like him. I do.
I do too. I just it's funny. Like I'm like, well, you didn't mention anything about like if we're gonna see the Klingons in season 4. Like for some reason, like that's the kind of stuff I care about with Discovery, and the interpersonal stories still have failed to capture me.
I tend to agree. I was knowing there's going to be problems between Stamets and Burnham, and now that Burnham's boyfriend does Stamets' job, it won't matter, and Stamets will be pushed off. Like, there's a lot of drama there that can be created, but yeah.
True. I don't know.
I suppose for myself, I agree, Paul. Like, the season 3, my feelings on the burn are well documented at this point.
I don't remember. What did you say about the burn?
I don't really remember the burn either. It's been great.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm fine. See, I like the idea of if you take, for example, say the Romulan supernova. So going back 1,000 years, the Romulan supernova. I would have loved to have seen the dash to evacuate Romulus. If that's maybe not that story, obviously going into season 4, but something potentially like that, where you have a deadline of say 10 episodes, so they don't. Hopefully, touch wood, they won't go with a, ooh, we don't know what it is. No, we know what it's going to be. We know we have a deadline, and we have to act toward this for whatever reason it's going to be. Now, knowing Star Trek Discovery, it's going to be the galaxy's going to blow up, you know? But what can we do to stop the galaxy from blowing up in the next X amount of episodes? And I would actually like to see that, because then you could have the Klingons could come in, N'Var could come in, you might have to have people working together.
What
do you think, guys?
What would be great is an outside threat, like another galaxy, like the Andromeda Galaxy, threatening the Milky Way. So the galaxy as a whole has to come together to defeat a common foe. And you know, considering they got the lithium back, maybe they're experimenting again with new drives. They find a drive that takes them to the Andromeda Galaxy, makes them aware of our presence, and you could do something really interesting that way. And we've done a live talking about our predictions for season four, and there's some good ideas in that. So
yeah, that's another plug for Trek Yards on YouTube. Yes,
I like it.
We always have good discussions like that.
I actually think that, you know, given our like gripes about the burn and the ticking clocks on Discovery, is like a perfect time for us to talk about Cargo Bay 101.
So, Cargo Bay 101, as I'm sure you know, is this infinite space which anything can go into and then immediately be blasted out of. Now, if it gets blasted out of there, that's it. It's gone. It's removed from Star Trek. Now, I want to stress that we change the rules every week. So, basically, if you want it gone going forward, but you don't really want to take it away from the past, that's fine too. Nobody's going to police that hard. But, is there anything in all of Star Trek that you think should be depressurized and suffer a horrific, if quick, destruction?
Yeah, we won't make you guys do it jointly, so Stuart, you start, and then
I'll go make a cup of tea while he'll discuss his...
No, it'll be quick. I can really think of two things. Can I do two things?
Of course. It's a big cargo bay.
Okay. Speaking of big cargo bays, hashtag Turbolift Caverns. Turbolift Planet. Go. Bye. Gone. Done. I don't know if anybody's ever said that before, but...
They have, yeah.
So that's good.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, we did
they're,
that already.
They're dead. Yeah. Oh, that one came up rather quickly.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, okay. So, yeah. How about view screens on large starships being windows? Because they never were until 2009. Now they're everywhere. Small ships like the Raven, stuff like that, they're more like a runabout. That's fine. Makes perfect sense. But they've always been view screens, never windows until 2009. Now everybody has them. So they can go bye-bye.
Yeah, I think I could get behind that myself, because I remember back in 1996 with First Contact, and that was the first time I had seen a view screen. It was actually just a wall. They turn on the view screen as they arrive at Sector 001, and up until that point, it's always been a star field or something. And
so there's like two opposite ends of the spectrum there. Is the wall view screen that's just a wall, blank wall that you stare at all day unless there's something outside to look at.
Or have there's a screensaver on of a fish aquarium or something.
Or there's the window where you can't not look out the damn thing.
You can make it opaque so you can't see out of it. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
I stand by the window. I stand by the window, so I'm not putting it in there, but you guys, you do it.
I'm
going
to vote to put the window in Cargo Bay 101. I don't love it, and kind of, maybe this is unfair to the window, but any graphic I've seen of the view screen on the window has just looks kind of messy, and that's more on, I suppose, the design. You know, say the Kelvin Universe view screen didn't love it. A lot of the Disco stuff didn't love it, except season 2, episode 1, Brother. I did love seeing Pike's kind of history with the Enterprise sitting out beyond, I have to say.
Yeah.
So can I keep that one, but chuck the rest of the windows in?
Cool.
Okay, so Sam, you're going to be the deciding vote here.
Oh god, no, it's already been gone. I mean, are you kidding? I pushed the button while you're talking. Are you kidding? It's gone. It's already frozen and shattered.
All right, but Sam, so, what do you want to put in there?
Well, I feel like I should have a smarter idea, but the first thing that came to my mind, and I know what it says to you about me. Stuart, any idea what I'm going to say? It's an Enterprise, if that helps. What one little thing goes doesn't matter. So in season one, they fight a Klingon ship, but it's they just load in the DS9. They go click click server, click click scenes, click click DS9, click click D7, load, render. And so they introduce a ship that they used 6 months earlier on DS9 inside Enterprise, even though they had another model on the hard drive ready that was made by one of their team for free because they wanted to, and it was included because the windows they didn't think were big enough. And while you don't necessarily think of it too much in the episode, they did tweak a little bit of the colours, but it's just annoying because it's just a mistake. It's just a mistake. That's it.
That's the D5 or the D4 that was.
Or it's the D4, but it's just a D4 Tenga model.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. No. Absolutely. I love seeing it in the show, but I hate seeing it in the show.
Yep.
So,
it's one of those things where the mistake canon, some things are just a mistake. It's like the Deckkite in Star Trek V. It's not canon, it's a mistake. Like, you can't, that's not canon. So, that's why Discovery stuff, you can kind of say, this is just a mistake. You know, it's like they call out the sect class as D7. It's like, it's not a D7, it's a sect. And you undid it anyway. It's you know, some things are just mistakes. And that was a mistake.
Yep. No, I'm good with that. Right, so those two things are sitting in the bay.
First thing.
Paul, do you have anything you want to add to the bay?
You know, since we're just going crazy with the Cargo Bay 101 today, I had a Trek Yards themed choice, a Starships themed choice. Now, I'm not going to put either one of you in the airlock. And you're all going to disagree with me, so I don't even know why I'm bringing it up, except Starships with more than two nacelles, for some reason, I just hate them. I just don't like the look. I think that it like throws off the like established like Starfleet aesthetic. And Discovery was really bad about, you know, that like how many four nacelled starships were in the Battle of the Binary Stars, like two, but still it was like, it was more than I wanted to see. But yeah. Hate them.
I disagree. I'm a big fan of the three nacelle dreadnoughts. I designed my
own. How big a fan are you?
You're referring to the Galaxy class Enterprise, though?
I don't like the Galaxy X at all, actually. But the going to Franz Joseph, like the Federation class.
I see.
The old school style, yeah.
Okay.
Three nacelle stewardship.
Right. Yeah, right there, right behind him. That he's
graphics.
This fully class that I designed right there.
Yes.
Nice. You see, now, I'm a big fan of the Constellation class. I do like the Stargazer a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you like the Buran, then?
I actually do like the Buran. Yeah, it grew on me. I didn't like it the first time I saw it, but then actually when I saw the model, it kind of more and more parts of it kind of caught my eye. Didn't love seeing it in Season 3, because why were all of the Season 1 Discovery ships? Anyway, it's fine. Okay, I myself would not put all ships with with more than two nacelles. So I don't know how we're feeling. What are your feelings on it, guys?
Well, obviously, I have a long history of designing ships for fan films, etc. My own ship has three sets of nacelles and eight sets of warp coils. So,
that's just excessive. So,
it's not though. There's a reason. If there's a reason, it doesn't look like there is. It looks as if there's two, which is the genius. But in fact, just to quote Andrew Probert, who designed the Constellation, it hasn't got four nacelles. It's got two pairs of two. If that helps you think about that in any way, so that's a slight technicality of So when you get to three nacelles,
extend warp core life by swapping out, so you can get twice the usage out of a long range explorer because you don't have all the nacelles.
And there really isn't anything beyond a four nacelle, except the Prometheus that has six, but two are inside the hull and not used until they're three sets of two. So really, it's just the fours and then a couple of threes. You know, threes
and
can be fun.
Yeah, because I'm no fun, I don't like the Prometheus class either.
Well,
so.
I'm walking out.
That's Samuel's favorite. So,
okay, at the risk of losing our guest this week, Paul, I think this is the one week where I think you've been outvoted. I think those multi-nacelled ships are safe, but the view screens and the Katinka class are going right out. Now that they have been blown out into space, that pretty much brings us up to time on this episode.
Can we shoot them?
Well, thank you. Oh, don't worry. We just can't say that on the recording. Oh. However, I've got a few quantum torpedoes and a couple of bottles of Romulan ale, and we're going to have us some fun. But I never said that. Guys, thank you so much for joining us this week. Genuinely, this has been a lot of fun. This almost seems silly to ask, but where can people find you online, guys?
On YouTube, look us up under Trek Yards, all one word. We're also on everything else, Discord, Facebook. We have a very active Facebook group, which is a great place to find out about our videos and stuff as well. And Instagram, and everywhere. We don't really post Instagram and stuff, but Facebook and YouTube is the big ones. So check
out. As you can tell, we're based on the ship content. That's how we started, and that's still what we do every Saturday. And the trick is, if you like any ship in Trek, just Google Trek Yards, that ship name. Very likely you'll find at least one video on it, if not a designer interview with a person that worked on the show, movie, even from the JJ and Discovery, etc., all the above, to talk about it. It's all there.
Excellent. Well, that's my weekend sorted. Yeah. But yeah, look, as I say, once more, thank you so much. Thank you everyone who joined us this evening and who has listened to this on Acast, Spotify, Amazon Music, all the usuals. I've been Sean.
I'm Paul.
And you've all been awesome. Have yourself a bloody good week. Live long and prosper. And once again, guys, thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
Later.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.